Welcome to Industry Insights, the EFM podcast presented by the European Film Market of the Berlinale. My name is Marta Bawaga. I'm a journalist. I'm currently covering the Festival for Variety and Braving the Storms. It's very cold here in Berlin right now. This podcast series shines a light on highly topical trendsetting industry issues, and it's designed as a compass for the film year ahead, helping professionals navigate the fast-changing creative landscape. Industry Insights is a year-round podcast co-funded by Creative Europe Media. Hello, I'm here with wonderful guests today. Rowan Woods, series advisor at the festival, the House of the Spirits showrunners Francisca Alegría and Fernanda Urejola, and creator, writer and showrunner Stephanie Wren, as well as producer Arto Sebastian, representing House of Young. Welcome, everybody. Rowan, how are you? I was hoping we can start with you, and I was hoping you can tell us a little bit more about this year's lineup.
Hi, yeah, great to be here, and thanks for shining a light on our series programme. We have six series from around the world in the Berlinale lineup this year, and we've done something slightly different. We've positioned all six of those series within the Berlinale Special Programme. So we have our own little subsection for series within that lineup. And we've got a really great mix of TV work from around the world. We've shown the first two episodes of Lord of the Flies, adapted by Jack Thorne, the writer behind Adolescence, and directed by BAFTA-winning Mark Munden, who did things like National Treasure, The Third Day, and from the production company behind Sex Education. It's a really striking and deeply cinematic piece of work, which we're excited to have. We've got another literary adaptation, The House of the Spirits, Spanish language adaptation of the Isabel Allende novel. First time it's been adapted for TV. And I love the way that it translates her sort of signature magical realism and rich themes for the screen. And, you know, you'll be digging into that later in the programme. We've got a brilliant German show called House of Yang, written and created by Stephanie Wren and directed by Mia Spengler, whose film Back for Good previously played at the Berlinale. Again, you'll be hearing a little bit more of that, but we love the way that it uses the language of genre to talk about prejudice and intergenerational family trauma. We've got a brilliant show called Ravayer, Not for Sale, which is a Spanish series created by Paul Rodriguez and co-directed by Rodriguez and Isaki Lacusta, whose film One Year, One Night played in competition here in Berlin a couple of years ago. So we'll be showing the first two episodes of that. We've got a brilliant British show written, directed and created by Charlotte Regan, who's an emerging director whose feature debut Scrapper, starring Harris Dickinson, played at Sundance a couple of years back. We'll be screening the first four episodes of that, and it's a really authored crime drama that uses elements of magical realism and some really kind of audacious sort of formal language to explore the life of a crime family. And then finally, we're showing the first four chapters of the new Mark Cousins cinematic odyssey, which looks at the history of documentary and brings his characteristic sort of curiosity and generosity and really global lens to look at the history of documentary.
Those are very exciting titles, I have to say, and they are so different. What makes a TV show right for the Berlinale, would you say?
Well, I'd say, you know, absolutely, you're right to identify that they're so different. We're really thinking about the full breadth of work that's being made in the episodic format. So it's really important to us to have work that feels really global. And we're also really interested in episodic work that sort of shares some kind of DNA with cinema. So whether that is the creative team, whether it is the visual language that's being used, whether it's the themes that are being explored, we're really interested in work that feels like it fits very naturally within a film festival context. And then, you know, as we're putting the programme together, you know, we get to see lots of really, really great work from around the world, but we think very, very carefully about how those, you know, up to six titles speak to each other and how they sit together to make sure that we have work that feels really, really distinct and broad and varied.
And I think that everybody's sick in Berlin right now, but how healthy is the international TV landscape at the moment? Are you noticing anything specific?
You know what? There's a lot of conversation at the moment, particularly in English language speaking TV industries, about how difficult things are at the moment. Certainly in the UK, considered to be a bit of a crisis, certainly within the US as well. And that's, you know, a lot of the industry is being rewritten and restructured as a lot of the streaming platforms and mergers are impacting there. All of that will shake itself out, I'm sure, over the next couple of years. But one thing that I was really struck by and have been for the last number of years when I've been programming TV work in film festivals is just how healthy the global landscape is. You know, there are always going to be challenges around financing, but I was really, really struck by the breadth and quality of work that's being made internationally within TV, and a lot of it feeling so distinctive and so authored and so exciting. And I think a lot of that reflects the fact, and most of these shows bear this out, is that so many writers, directors and producers are now moving quite fluidly between film and television and are bringing a really cinematic, really authorial vision to television, which I think is really exciting.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Please stay safe, stay warm, and I hope to see you soon.
Thanks so much.
I'm going to welcome two very brave women, Francisca and Fernanda. And when I'm saying brave, it's because they are behind The House of the Spirits, which is such an ambitious show. It's also based on Isabel Allende's best-selling book, which I think we all remember still very well. And that maybe would be my first question to you. Was it challenging to take on something so many people know and I think really love, actually?
Yes. Yes. The short answer, yes. It was. It's a massive yes, I think. And we've talked about this because it's been many years in the making. And I think that it helped us not understanding the scope of what we were doing because it allowed us to imagine and to kind of like take it in our hands with Isabel Allende's blessing. But I think that the pressure can be too much if you're thinking of the fact that you have a huge responsibility all the time.
Yeah, and it was a challenge in many, many ways as well. Like it's a best-selling book, but also it's 50 years span of story in 8 episodes. There's a lot of characters. As you know, Isabel Allende writes very detailed. And I think one of the most important things for us was to really understand that literature and what we do is two different monsters, right? So we hope that this will make more people to read the book and to enjoy the show as its own as well.
I have to say, I'm getting nervous just listening to you. Are you actually staying very faithful to the novel, or did you allow yourself to stray a bit?
I gotta say that Isabel Allende pushed us to drift away from certain things. But I don't know, if we wanted to compare to the film, for example, we stay closer to the novel. One, because we have more time, you know, it's 8 episodes. But we wanted to capture as much as possible from her very rich, you know, literature character. So there's definitely going to be things that are not exactly the same. But I would say we mostly kept faithful.
Yeah, and the essence, like the essence is there. And of course, now this was written more than 40 years ago. So we needed to give it also the side of now, like why tell the story now?
A new breath.
A new breath, exactly.
Well, then let me ask you the same thing. Why tell the story now? What did you end it up with?
I mean, why not?
You know what? In the rereading of the novel when we first started, both of us were really shocked at how modern or at how poignant were her topics. In Chile, we were living a new, like a social revolution at the time that we started, like a new social struggle started. And while we were reading, we really felt that the same themes that she was talking about 40 years ago were still very relevant, some more relevant. I mean, there's a lot in the novel that talks about violence against women. And we've seen, you know, like, even if we've gone very ahead, like we've taken steps forward in certain laws to protect us women, it feels sometimes that we still need so much more to go. And themes like these are very relevant today.
Sadly, it's very relevant today still. But yeah, it's important to tell this story now, especially.
I was thinking about it the other day, that the way she was combining private lives with politics, history, this feels very timely as well. So many people are dealing with it right now. They can't escape politics. They can't escape history. So it just becomes one for everybody, it feels like. Is it a big part of the show, this combination? Fernanda, you mentioned you're going to be traveling through time. So I guess you're going to show different issues and different struggles for those characters.
See, and we can't forget that this is a family saga and something that we really wanted to pay a lot of attention. Of course, as you're saying, like, there's no separation between the personal and the politics, right? We cannot escape. But also the generational trauma and how these women need to heal through memory, through understand their past. It's so important. And it's so relevant in our country specifically, too, that it's a country that tends to forget a lot. So this generational, we call it like women passing the baton to the next generation, right? And each woman are able to do what they're capable in their time, but they're always doing the work. And that's so beautiful.
And these are wonderful protagonists precisely because they are so different. They have to deal with different things. But also, as you said, there is this connection. They are a family. Was it difficult to find the right people, the right women, when you were already thinking about those roles?
One of the biggest, the most complex pieces of the puzzle was the families, because we need to have a resemblance between siblings, between mother-daughter, mother-son. And we were dealing with a Latin American cast and Ibero-American cast, because we also casted from Spain. So yes, we needed to see it as an ensemble all the time. We couldn't just think about one single character. We had to be thinking, for example, that three actresses were going to play one role, from the little girl Clara, for example, to then in her 20s and then in her 40s. So it was kind of like always thinking as a net of people and characters.
And one more thing that I used to really love about the novel and then the film that we mentioned very briefly at the beginning was the fact that it embraced magic. That magic was such a big part of that universe. How are you playing with it in the show?
Well, Fer, you can jump in, but I think part of our philosophy in putting this into film language was to keep it as rooted as possible, because in Latin American culture, magical realism, if we can call that, because that's a literary movement, it's that people feel that it's happening right there. So it's not fantasy. It's something that needs to feel familiar and needs to feel like it's going to happen to you at any moment. So that was a line for us, the limitation. There is magic and there's some moments that you're not sure if what you're seeing is real or not. And this is like a space, an arena that we really wanted to explore, because the world of the esoteric, where Clara especially moves, it's a very ambiguous world. Sometimes you don't know, you know, if what you're seeing is a dead person or that person is alive.
And I just really like that when you talk about the show now, you both smile so much. But I can imagine that it wasn't easy because it's such an ambitious undertaking. And would you mind telling me a little bit about how did it start, how long it took, and why you never gave up? I always love to ask filmmakers this, especially in Berlin, because it feels that every film and every show is just, it's just a miracle in itself.
Well, we are fans of the novel to start and fans of Isabel Allende. she was also very, very, very courageous to write this story. We cannot forget that she started writing this while we were in dictatorship. So she is the most brave woman that I've ever met, actually. And it's a story that is necessary to keep talking about it. And as we were saying before, all the themes are still so relevant today, sadly. So I think we had like this urge to do it. Like, it was really necessary. We couldn't stop. And we had an amazing team behind us that allowed us to keep going, even in the hardest moments. Fran, you can jump in.
Just to add, I think that it was our fascination and love for the novel. The fact that it's such an important piece of Latin American culture, the House of the Spirits, you know, it has spoken to so many of us, of our mothers, aunts, grandmothers, ourselves. And I think, yeah, it's just such a delight that whenever, you know, we all face adversity, right? Like, I don't know, the location does not work, or, you know, like, there's delays, many things that we know. But it was the love for the novel. And as Fernanda is saying, like, such a robust team behind us and with us, both in the production side and also, you know, in the crew, the cast, everyone. I think that the Isabel Allende's charm sort of like spread all over, because it's something like this, you cannot do it by yourself. You need hundreds of people that are really invested, and we were lucky to have that.
Yeah, and I think also in every stage of the process, the people that got involved with us, like, everybody ended up saying, like, this project made them change. Like, it was a different project. They all learned something. And that was so beautiful to watch as well, to be part of that. And for us specifically, like, it really changed our lives. We have no idea how the audience is going to take it, but for us, it's already the perfect thing that we did it.
Oh, it's such a massive compliment for somebody to say it changed my life, and to say it so early on, too.
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen now. But the process was so magical, every stage of it, even with the hard moments. But it was very, very magical and life-changing.
And it's funny, because sometimes when we really love something, might be a book, might be a film, we're sometimes afraid to touch it or change it or, dare I say, improve it. But I guess you found something in the story where it just felt right to maybe tell it again and maybe find new people who don't know it yet. I mean, new generations, who knows? Maybe they didn't grow up with it like we did.
Yeah. And I was telling you before, like, I think if we made more people, a younger generation, to go and read the book, that will be like a win-win, you know? That will be everything.
And were you thinking specifically about younger audience also when you're developing it? And in what ways were you trying to make it attractive for them as well?
I don't think it was something that was in our minds all the time, but I think that we did need to put certain things in context, the politics of the time, for example, thinking of younger audiences that are not, of course, only in Chile, but they're all over the world. In that sense, I think we wanted to make sure that everyone is following the political, for example. And we talk a lot about younger characters in their teenage years. And there's a specific love story of Blanca and Pedro III, who start in a really young age. And that's a very kind of like fresh love story as well, that, you know, teenagers could also connect, for example.
There's a specific theme as well, which is violence against women, that I think now we have a different point of view from when even Isabel Allende, being herself a very feminist woman of the time, she was not able to see the full scope of it as well. And now the way that younger generations, younger women specifically, they talk about it, they fought for it, and it's different. We have a different collective way of seeing this and understanding this in a deeper way. What I think Isabel Allende is amazing is that she was able to talk about these themes early on and with so much clarity. But now for younger generations, there's things that they cannot accept, different than we did when we were teenagers. Because the narrative, the global narrative is different.
Thank God they don't accept those things. Makes me very happy when I hear that. But last year it was my pleasure to moderate a panel here in Berlin precisely about the depictions of sexual violence in TV shows. And I'm curious, how did you decide to approach it? Because it can be such a sensitive subject. So many viewers don't want to be triggered by it yet. You want to underline that this is a horrific crime. So would you mind telling me a little bit more about that?
That was one of the most complex and long ongoing conversations, because for us it was, as you say, a priority on these scenes, the point of view that we were on, right? Like, that's the first thing. And how much we want and can show to protect the integrity of the character versus not going and whitewash violence, you know? Like, not make it less. Don't downplay violence. Because in our show, we end in the dictatorship with very horrible scenes. And we, you know, we had the very sort of like difficult question of how loyal we are to the victims who suffered during the dictatorship. You know, we cannot just kind of like hide it, or we cannot make it prettier, or we cannot make it more palatable sometimes, because then what would we be saying of our history? So I guess audiences will say that was the balance that we had in our minds all the time, seeing it always from the female perspective, protecting the integrity of our characters, not doing things just because, not pushing things for action, but also not hiding horrible facts that had happened to women and to groups of women.
And also another thing that shifted from our industry in the last years is all the protocols to shoot those scenes as well. For me, it was like the first time I shot with these protocols, and it made complete difference. So that's very interesting. And I really want to hear what the audience feel about those scenes, because we were really careful on how to show it and what's the perspective through the lens through where we're showing these things.
It's such a massive responsibility when you want to be honest, but at the same time, I mean, you want to make sure that people still watch the show, that they're not afraid of it, right? And sounds like you did just that. I'm very curious, do you actually have a favorite storyline or a favorite character? Because you've been with them for such a long time.
For me, it's impossible not to love Clara. Like, Clara is the magical grandmother. It's like the ethereal character. But I love all of the female characters so much, because they're so different and so complex. The daughter, Blanca, which I had the honor to portray as well in the last part of the role. It's so complex. Nobody understands her really. But there's so much trauma in her as well, and trauma that she was not able to articulate. And on the other hand, Alva, which is the granddaughter, the one, the narrator of her story, the one that it's able to grab the whole spectrum, the whole scale of the family story and put words to it. It's so courageous. It's such a strong character, very tragic, but so strong. So it's hard to decide which is your favorite female character.
Yeah, I'm being very cruel, I know. Pick your favorites.
I think one of our queer characters, Cerula, one of our tragic characters, I really love. She's a very fascinating character to me. She starts from a place of being very rigid, very afraid, very fearful of showing her emotions and opening up. With Clara, opening up to love, to feeling worthy. I don't know. We'll see what people think, but, you know, it's also a slightly different take. Not different, but we went a bit further with her inner world as a queer character.
I can't wait to meet them all. Thank you so much. And thank you for bringing this magic to Berlin. We need it.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Marta, and everyone for inviting us.
It's a dream
for us. We're really expectant of the festival. But yeah, thank you so much for this space. We appreciate it a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now we're going to talk a little bit about House of Young. And as I mentioned at the beginning, Stephanie and Art are here to tell us everything, although that's not true, because actually it's a very mysterious show. Two girls disappear from the same house, first 1945, then in the 90s, and they never reappear, which is why we won't ask them how it ends, but we can ask them how it all started. What was the initial spark? Was it somehow connected to your own background? Walk me through it.
Thank you very much for having us here. So the initial spark was actually very personal. My father is Chinese and my mother is German. And my German grandmother, she had dementia, and she always looked at my father as if he was a ghost, and she was really scared of him. So my mom was born in 1945, and so my grandmother was in her best years during the war, and there was never a spoken word about my German grandfather. So I don't know anything about this man who died before I was born. There was a lot of silence and mystery also ongoing in my own family. So this always sparked a lot of questions for me. And when we learned about Holocaust in school, I always asked myself, what would have happened to my own family? And I never got a question there. And only a few years ago, I stumbled upon the fact that actually there was a German Chinatown in Hamburg. And there were a lot of Chinese people in Germany, and also a lot more in other cities, not only the harbors, but at universities. So so this really sparked something in me. And I thought I wanted to make a show about basically my family story and all the mysteries and the silence that was inherited, but also a show for people like me who ask themselves these questions. Have people like me existed before, or is it a first? So, yeah.
It sounds like a very personal story. And I'm curious, now you're about to show it for the first time. How does it feel like to tell a story that's going to be a fictional story for so many people, but there is this connection to your own family?
It's still amazing to me that the show actually got made and that we now have our premiere at Berlinale. I remember when Arthur called me with the news, and I burst into tears and couldn't scream. I was just it's just amazing for me to that this show is a reality now. And I showed it to my young nieces and my nephew, who are now 7, 11 and 12. And for them, it's a totally different reality that shows like this exist in their timeline, and that they are represented on screen all the time, or more often than it was when I was young. So, I mean, it started already during the casting process when I watched all the e-castings from all the young actresses we were looking for with Asian background. And suddenly I saw myself on screen, not only once, but 100 times. And that was just so special feeling, and the special feeling has just never left this project. And now having a premiere at the Berlinale is just I have no words for that. So, yeah.
Arthur, I'm not going to ask you to recreate that phone call, although I can imagine how special it was. But when you became involved, did you feel that there was already something missing in the German series landscape, something that maybe this show can provide?
Well, kind of. I mean, I don't want to talk badly about the German series market, but what I found so compelling about the story was the personal touch that we just mentioned. My background is art house cinema, and I always feel like once a writer, creator, showrunner, director, once they really get to meet their own demons, we're onto something, right? And this is in the very first meeting when we talked about the first 3-page document with the first ideas, we came to the question of what is this really about? What is the darkest we can go? Where is the emotional core of all of this? And this is, in my opinion, something we never left in the whole development process. We always, we kept looking without going necessarily into a super dark way of storytelling. It's a genre show that also has some lighter moments. It has suspense, and it opens up to a wider audience while still maintaining this intensity that only a personal connection can bring. And that's what I think is sometimes missing in German television. Yes.
And you mentioned this darkness which brings me to a very interesting place called the Black Forest. Would you say that it became a little bit like one of the characters, because it truly sounds so?
Well, so I grew up in the Black Forest, and I mean, as a child, it was also a magical place because you could play in the forest for hours and hours, and we built little huts and we played there, and it was just our little secret place. So it has something very mystical about it that's also very magical. But when I left the Black Forest for the first time for a longer period of time, when I was 14 and I went to the UK for like a school exchange, and I came back after a few weeks, and for the first time I realized how dark, like visually dark, this place is. And it just appeared to me for the first time, and I've been living there like my whole life, and then suddenly I just realized. So of course this feeling of darkness, literally, that this is something I really wanted to capture in the show. Funnily enough, we ended up not shooting in the Black Forest, but recreating it, because most of the show will actually take place in the house. And we wanted to transport this feeling also into the house. So the house is much more its own character in the show than the Black Forest itself.
I've seen enough horror films and horror shows to know that a house is the scariest place of them all. Were you thinking about any films or any visual references when you were creating this universe? Because it can be so claustrophobic, but I mean, houses have so many secrets. You never know what's hiding underneath.
We worked with a fantastic production designer, Cosima Valenza. She's also the production designer on The Sound of Falling, which won in Cannes last year, and where she also recreated like a house in different timelines. And this was also the most important thing, that every timeline was somehow different than the other, but still recognizable. So, and I think like moving into the different timelines, it makes the house feel like not just one, but multiple universes, basically. And that was really important. As for references, actually, we talked a lot about The Sixth Sense. One of the important timelines is 1999. And I really, you know, I was 12 in 1999. All I did was like watching movies and TV shows. And The Sixth Sense came out in 1999, and it shaped my writing and my storytelling so much. I'm a big Emmett Shyamalan fan. I know that he peaked early, but I think it's fascinating. That's so fascinating what he's doing with his movies. So we talked a lot about The Sixth Sense, but also about The Others, which is also a movie that came out in 1999, but is set in 1945. And it's set basically also almost only in one house. So that was also a big reference. But we changed 1945 actually to 1949 in the post-production. So we wanted to make 1949 feel not too like sepia and not like, you know, how 1940s usual felt, but it was more the Portrait of a Lady on Fire reference actually that we embraced. Like we want colors, and we wanted to have warmth inside of this house where the origin lies, and that it's not only bad inside of this house, but there was love and there is love. And with a family, you know, you always have all sides of it. You have birth and death and love and hate all in one place in this house of one family over three generations. And I think that's what we tried to achieve.
The Sixth Sense and The Others. You just reminded me of two films that really traumatized me as a child. So thank you for that. But also it makes me remember this very special moment in the cinema when everybody just went very quiet and then started to yell, "Is he dead? Is he a ghost?" It was unbelievable. I still remember it so well. Can we expect moments like this in this show?
As I mentioned, those were big references. I always wanted to have like a big twist ending, and I wasn't sure if I can make it with a TV show, if that is actually possible. So maybe Arthur can tell you a little bit about my process of writing episode 5 and 6. But in the end, we actually came to I think, like a really cool twist ending at the end of episode 6. And I'm a bit sad that we won't get to show it to the Berlinale audience, because I would have loved for this moment. But yeah, there will be a big twist ending, and I'm very excited of how viewers will find it. Yes.
Yeah, same for me. I mean, this was something we were really looking for a long time, because obviously it's hard to achieve, because especially growing up in the 90s, this was a thing back then. And so to be really inventive and unique and not just bring something that we already know to the table we were trying to, or like Stephanie was, while writing, especially being sure about the whole ending bit. So we moved along and it was very new to most of the contributors because it's obviously it's a big risk to go along while you're already preparing the show, not entirely knowing the ending. Yeah. But I mean, Wim Wenders once said, like, knowing the ending before you go to shoot is cheating. I think it's a very big opportunity for the whole story to really evolve to where it needed to be in the end, you know? So, I mean, sure, the final twist kind of was in all our heads quite a while already, but how to get there, how to shape the last episodes, this was a very vivid process and experience for all of us, and it made the whole preparation and shooting exciting and flexible, which was in the end a very good thing, especially since we managed to put together a team of people, a lot of women who managed to work so great and so trusting. It felt like blind trust between the main departments, you know, from showrunning, director, production designer, the DOP, costumes, everybody. They were communicating so well and sharing this vision at some point so deeply that I felt, yeah, they know what they're doing, even though it's not entirely on paper yet. And this went through the whole shooting process as well. It was a very unique and magical production to me because I didn't have to do so much translation between different people, but they all managed to create something really together and share a vision, which was beautiful to see.
To everybody who's listening, prepare to be shocked. You should see Stephanie's face when she was talking about the ending. I'm already very, very afraid. We talked at the very beginning about those two girls who disappear, but there's also somebody else who appears, who tries to change things. Could you talk to me about Jessie and her story and maybe whether she manages to break the cycle for once?
Well, yes, of course. Jessie is there. She's in the present. And in 1999, she lost her sister because her sister disappeared out of the house with no trace and she's never been found. And with the sister, also the room disappears where the sister is gone. So the house somehow has moved. And Jessie obviously is very traumatized by this. And she blames herself because the parents weren't in the house alone with friends. And they smoked a bit of weed and they had some alcohol and they shouldn't have. And so, and then this all happened and she really blames herself. So in the present, when she comes back, she just wants to sell the house and she just wants to forget all of this. And she has a young daughter, Mila, who is 16 and is a teenager and does not really know what happened. She just thinks her mom is crazy and she's always been crazy. So they have like a kind of a difficult mother-daughter bond. And when they arrive at the house, Jessie starts to remember and what happened back then. And then ghosts appear and Mila doesn't see them. And she still thinks her mom is crazy. But is she? And are those ghosts not really there? And yeah, Jessie starts to believe that she can actually break the cycle, that she can actually get her sister back. And she tries that. But, you know, in the end, it's all about, can we really break the cycle? Our generation, we go a lot of to therapy and we try to do better than our parents and we talk about the trauma and everything. But I feel it's still so much in our DNA and we are so shaped by this. Can we really break the cycle? I think this is what she's going through and where there will be an answer in the end, but I can't tell you yet.
It's such a big question too, and such a universal question. As you said, so many people are dealing with it right now. It's funny because listening to you, it becomes obvious that it's a very specific story about a very specific experience. And yet here we are now, you're talking about something that everybody has experienced, I guess. Can the cycle be broken? What's your take on it? Can it? Please say yes.
Yes, I think the first thing that we can change is that we really understand what went wrong. Why was there a cycle in the first place? Why is there trauma in the first place? And acknowledge it and respect that it's there and not try to avoid it. And I think a lot of people just try to avoid it and not look where they should look. And it's tough, you know, it takes work And it takes some years if you really want to change something about that. So it's just not an easy fix. But if you really want to break it, I'm sure you can, but it's not easy. And as Arthur says, it comes with a price. It takes work. And it's not a thing of like, you know, you go to therapy a little bit and then it's done. That's not how it goes. So it's a bit more difficult. Jessie, actually, she does a lot. So I think she deserves it. Yeah, again, I can't tell you if she really manages to.
I'll keep my fingers crossed for Jessie. I think she needs all the support she can get. Thank you both so much. And I'm going to be waiting for the twist ending. I'm going to let you know if it traumatized me, hopefully.
Well, I hope no further traumatizing will happen through the series, but the opposite, rather.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for being with us today and to our listeners for joining. That's all for today's episode, unfortunately, but before we sign off, here's a quick look at what's coming up. Tomorrow marks the start of the Berlinale Series Market from 15th to 18th February, this joint initiative of the European Market, the Berlinale Co-Production Market and Berlinale Talents brings industry professionals from around the world together for 3 days. 3 days dedicated to serial storytelling. With that comes a highlight you absolutely shouldn't miss. I think you understood it now when we were talking about the show. The pre-opening talk with more representatives of the House of the Spirits at 3:30 in Mirror Tent. Inside adapting the House of the Spirits with Francisca Alegría, Fernanda Urejola, Andres Wood, Javiera Balmaceda and Courtney Saladino, and it will be moderated by Rowan Woods. The show was produced by Film Nation Entertainment and Amazon MGM Studios. On Tuesday, the team of House of Young will give even more insights into their series at 5 in Cinemax 3. Besides Stephanie Wren and Arto Sebastian, Katharina Döpfner will also be on stage. Katharina is a commissioning editor in SVR and the director of series Mia Spengel. Berlinale Series Market's main partner is Film und Medienstiftung Nordrhein-Westfalen and is also funded by the Medienbord Berlin-Brandenburg. This season of Industry Insights is produced in cooperation with Variety and co-funded by Creative Europe Media. Subscribe and helps to spread the word. You can find us wherever you get your podcast and also on the European Film Market website at www.efm-berlinale.com. We look forward to welcome you to future episodes of Industry Insights. Goodbye.